This is the week of August 21st and the music of Andre Lewis at AndreLewis.com. Hi, I'm Marlena, and you're listening to the Marlena Program, heard weekly at this time on ACB Radio Mainstream. For the next 2 hours, give or take, we'll be taking your phone calls at 866-666-7926. Love to hear your thoughts, your comments, your ideas, your suggestions, your opinions, whatever. Why don't you come on in, get comfy, spend some time with me, and give me a call, huh? Right here on Marlena. And a very, very pleasant good evening, good morning to you, wherever you might be. I am Marlena, and I'm delighted to have you here with me again on ACB Radio for another Marlena program. Before we get started, let me apologize for the slightly delayed start. We had a slight miscommunication betwixt the engineer and the talent. Now, we've got an engineer, but I'm still looking for the talent around here. I'm not quite sure where the talent went. But anyway, we are with you now, and let me just go over a couple of little housekeeping details, and then let me tell you about our guest for this week's program. If you're listening to this program at any time other than 9 to 10 Eastern on a Sunday night in North America, 6 to 7 Pacific, or bright and early on a Monday UTC morning, then you are listening to a repeat, and what we'd like you to do is put your feet up and enjoy the program, because it's going to be a good one tonight. If, however, you are listening live during those times, we will be opening the lines, and the telephone number to call, of course, is 866-666-7926. It is not often that I get to invite a friend to join me on this program, a friend at least as long as I've known tonight's guest. And I am thrilled to tell you a little bit about tonight's guest. Mr. Joel Snyder spent nearly 20 years at the National Endowment for the Arts as the coordinator of funding for this nation's arts, performing arts centers and festivals. In 1981, he helped to establish one of the first ongoing radio reading services in the country for the Washington Ear in Washington, D.C. And that's actually, I think, when I first met him. You can hear Joel's voice in narrations of some PBS Playhouse broadcasts, some feature films, and some TV productions. And he is also described, and this is what I always think of when I think of Joel Snyder, he has also described the IMAX film Blue Planet and the planetarium show and A Star to Steer Her By, which is at the Smithsonian's Air and Space Museum. From the White House in Washington to the National Museum of the American Indian in New York City, Joel has trained docents and tour guides in descriptive techniques. He has introduced description to many countries such as Israel, Romania, Russia, Bulgaria, and there's probably even more than I know of. He's the founding chair of the steering committee and a current board member for the audio, I knew I was going to mess this up, Joel, for Audio Description International, as well as he is the director of descriptive media for the National Caption Institute. Hey, Joel, after all that stuff, how the heck are you?
Hey, Marlena, I'm just wonderful, and you sound great, too.
Well,
it's so great to hear you on the air there, as I do so often at this hour.
Well,
I want you to know I'm a fan,
as well as
a dear friend.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on at the last moment. May I share with our listeners our little interchange earlier today?
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah, of course.
So I had a scheduled guest for the show, and the person had to cancel. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Oh my gosh. And then I thought, you know, I really ought to get Joel on here to follow up so that we can talk some more about audio description, descriptive video after our long discussion last week about S2686. I thought, well, all right, I'll send him an email. So I send him an email. I get this email back. This guy says, I'm at a wedding, but I'll be home in time. I'm thinking, what are you doing checking your email at a wedding?
Well, I want you to know it was the wedding of my dear niece, Rebecca Snyder, and if she's listening, I love you, Becky, and all my attention was glued to the wedding, of course, but it was after the wedding. It was at the reception, and we were waiting for dinner and such. It was just a little interlude there or something, you know.
You're just an email junkie.
You got it. That's right. Listen, Marlene, I do want to just mention one thing, because I think you noted that in 1981 I was part of the creation of a radio reading service in Washington, which is not really accurate. I just want to mention the Washington Ear, which many of your listeners may know, was the creation of Dr. Margaret Fanshtiel at the time, actually, Margaret Rockwell.
Right.
At the time, she created the Washington Ear, which is one of the nation's finest radio reading services. What happened in 1980 and 81 was Margaret and Cody Fanshtiel founded the world's first ongoing audio description service, and that's what I was a part of. So I was a volunteer starting in the early 70s as one of their readers.
Yes.
For the radio reading service.
Yes.
And actually, as a bit of a segue to description, what's kind of nice is as a volunteer as part of their radio reading, even before audio description came to be as an ongoing service in Washington, you know, in a way, I was already describing, because one of my assignments was reading the Washington Post on Sunday.
Oh, and how well I remember that.
Well, there you go. How do you read the Sunday Post? What's the first thing people turn to in the newspaper on a Sunday is the comics.
And
how do you convey the comics to your audience on a radio reading service without describing the visual images? So I was already a describer before we formalized things in 1980-81. So, and actually it harkens back. I wonder how many of your listeners perhaps are from the New York area or are old enough to remember Fiorello LaGuardia, the namesake of LaGuardia Airport. Of course, he was the mayor of New York in the 40s, and there was a newspaper strike around that time, and he knew how to endear himself to the voters. He wasn't going to let any newspaper strike get between himself and his voters. He went on the radio, and he read the funnies to people.
Really?
He was one of the first describers. He got on the radio, and he described the funnies, and he read the comics to his listeners, his constituents, and so
Isn't that interesting? I never knew that.
There you go. Mayor LaGuardia of New York City.
Well, now tell me a bit about the first performance that you described, that you actually audio described. Tell us about that.
Wow, that's a boy. You know, you're amazing, Marlena, because I'm not sure anybody has ever actually asked me that, and I've had umpteen questions and interviews over the years. It's been a good 26 years now. I would be hard-pressed to remember the very first. It was probably a production at Arena Stage, because they were the first to institute a program of description. It all began in the performing arts. There are so many individual little stories and exchanges and things that have happened over the years. For instance, I do recall describing, for instance, Lord Ian McKellen's acting Shakespeare. I'm fond of this little story at Olney Theater in suburban Maryland. This is the great Shakespearean actor, and he was doing a series of Shakespearean monologues in a one-man show called Acting Shakespeare. And I went out to see the show, golly, 5 or 6 times in preparation for doing the description. And I remember, actually, it was a July 12th. I remember that it was my anniversary, and I had taken my wife that day to preview the show, one of the many previews, and he graciously was out there after the show meeting people, and I went up to meet him. I even bought a T-shirt, and he signed it, and I went up to him and said, "Lord McKellen, what a wonderful show. I've enjoyed it every time I've seen it. This is the 5th or 6th time," and he was kind of impressed with that, I guess, and said, "Oh, really? My, this many times you've come to see the show?" I said, "Well, I'm of course preparing to do the audio description for the show this coming weekend," and he didn't know anything about it, which, of course, that's a little cautionary note for theaters that offer description. You really need to make sure the stage management and the performers know. So I explained it to him very briefly because there were many people that wanted to meet him, and then he paused and looked at me, and he didn't have a very happy expression on his face, you know, and he said to me in this booming, wonderful voice of his, "I see, you're going to be talking while I'm talking?" And I said, no, you don't understand.
No,
that's not the way, no. And he insisted that I come that weekend, you know, before the matinee, and he wanted to be on stage while I was in the booth, and he wanted to be absolutely certain he would not be distracted by my description, and there was no way because I would be in a booth and all of that. But so a little cautionary tale. There are all kinds of little tales and stories you come across and are privy to in being a describer over the years. But
well,
anyway.
I was very privileged to be at the Kennedy Center's first AD audio description performance, and I'm trying to go back, you know, more than 20 something years.
That would be more than 20 years.
Yeah, I think it was Helen Keller, the Miracle Worker.
Oh my!
I recall, and then when I moved to Seattle, I was also very privileged, although the film was not quite as culturally important as The Miracle Worker, but I was also privileged to be at the first video-described movie ever brought to air in Seattle, which was a snuff film called 8mm. So,
oh, my goodness.
It's been the gambit. But
oh, my goodness.
Could you talk to us? And we are going to open the line. We're going to ask Gary, the board guy, to go ahead and open the line. The number is 866-666-7926. But could you tell us a little bit? Let's start with the theater, because that's where this all really began.
That's right.
What are the mechanics of how you do what you do in the theater as a describer?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to go. And by the way, if we have time, I have on my laptop here, and I can hold the phone up to the speaker, a little clip of some things that we've done to demonstrate description, well, a little clip with and without description, if you'd like to try that. But in answer to your question, sure, in theater, first of all, the fundamentals of audio description, I think, come into play whether you're talking about description for theater, for television, for film, or even for museums. And my own company, Audio Description Associates, where I focus on museums and theater, and of course, at NCI, National Captioning Institute, where I direct Describe Media, that's focused on television and film, of course. But I think for any venue, any arts area, or any activity where you're making the visual image accessible, I think the fundamentals are the same. The first thing that describers focus on is observation. These fundamentals I've kind of culled and written about. In fact, I'll digress just for a moment and announce to your audience something that Chris Gray and I've worked on, is that we will be collaborating. We, the NCI and Audio Description Associates and American Council of Blind, will be within the next year publishing a book on audio description. It'll be an ACB Press publication on audio description, which I'm really pleased to be authoring and co-authoring with a user of description, to be announced. We're going to hopefully make it kind of a Bible on audio description. We're looking forward to that. But a lot of it's already written, but we're going to look for input from lots of folks around the country, a lot of your listeners certainly. A lot of these fundamentals, as I say, first and foremost, observation. Describers try to drink in all there is to see about a visual event, about everything there is visually from a variety of perspectives. Secondly, we need to edit from what we see what is most pertinent to an understanding. He points to his head, and an appreciation. His hand is over his heart. Of that visual event, I oftentimes say description is as much about what not to describe as it is about what to describe, because there is so much there that's visual. We have such little time in which to describe because we're trying to insert our words in the pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue. So we have to focus in on the most critical, most essential bits and pieces of visual business. So we edit from what we see. That's the second fundamental. Third fundamental is perhaps the most important, is language. All of it is boiled down to words. The phrase, of course, that we're often familiar with is, a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, with description, it's reversed in a way. The picture is not so much worth a thousand words. Sometimes a few well-chosen words conjure vivid and lasting images, and the best describers have to find those precise words, those words that are concise, imaginative, and vivid, to conjure those images and in as little time as possible. Metaphors, vivid language, synonyms, language that does a lot with a little, really. And then the fourth fundamental is the voice, because you're hearing all of this, and of course, studies have been done that indicate a great percentage of meaning is communicated with how one says what one says, not so much what one says,
yes,
but how one says it.
Yes.
So the using the vocal instrument is so important. In theater specifically, to tie in back to that particular area, the mechanics there is some technical stuff to remember, of course, and to play with, but it's not very complicated. Most theaters, most performing arts centers use one of two systems, either an FM radio-based system or an infrared system. Infrared is the kind of thing you might be used to in a film theater, oftentimes referred to as a line-of-sight system, where the signal, sound signal, is being bounced from a transmitter that's mounted, hard-wired, kind of how hard-mounted in the theater, and being communicated to a receiver that the user has on their person and wearing a headset connected to the receiver. But there's a little ball, a little glass ball on it, and the line of sight, the sound is being communicated to you via a infrared light, basically, little stream of light, basically, that you can't see. No one can see it, actually. If you put your hand in front of that light, though, you'll get static.
Yes, lots of white noise. Yeah,
you got it. Exactly. So,
you know, we have a caller, so we bring the caller
All
right, let's do that. Hello,
great
caller. You've been waiting very patiently. Thank you so much. You're with Joel Snyder and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. This is Ron.
Hi, Ron.
Kent, Washington.
And there.
One question I'd like to ask is, how many reading services were you in? Did you help set up just the Washington Ear or were there others too that you helped out?
All right, Ron, well, I'm going to hang up and let Joel answer because I think a lot of people are going to want to get through.
Okay.
Okay? Did you have another question?
And how many reading services stream over the Internet?
All right. Great. Thanks, Ron.
Okay. Well, I'll hang up.
All righty. Bye-bye.
That's great, Ron. Thanks for calling in. Well, I made the clarification, of course, that I'm not really the expert on reading radio
right.
reading services so much. My good friend Mike Duke in Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, Mike is a good guy.
He's fantastic, and he's a he might even be listening. He is and many of your people in your audience are much well versed in better versed in radio reading services than I am. I made the clarification that while I was a volunteer with the Washington Ear many years ago, I wasn't involved in the setup of the Washington Ear as a radio reading service. I was involved in their putting together the audio description service as one of their first volunteers for the audio description service. So if Ron is referring to the audio description program, I was involved in helping set up that one in the Washington, D.C. area. Now, since that time, I have, I have helped set up, several dozen audio description programs throughout the country. I would say probably in 20-some states, and in probably a dozen different countries around the world. Those are programs for the performing arts, and then I have set up audio-described tours in museums, probably in another dozen states around the nation, and done workshops and spoken on description in many different countries as well. As far as streaming on the Internet, that's a good question. Again, with respect to radio reading services, I can't speak to that, but with respect to description, that's an interesting question. I have been involved with some museums that do provide description, streaming description on the web. I don't know if, for instance, the Lower East Side Tenement Museum in New York still offers description of some of the images on their website, but I did provide, for instance, you could go to their website and experience their museum through their website. You could click on images of their rooms and experience them without being there, largely because the Tenement Museum is inaccessible to folks in wheelchairs because of its nature. The hallways are extremely narrow. So to make it accessible to folks who can't access, say, the second floor, you can access it on the web.
Oh, very cool.
So you can click on a room and actually move your cursor, which is not obviously friendly to folks who are blind or have low vision, but a person who's sighted can move the cursor up and actually see the roof, if you will. You can get a 360-degree view. Well, what we did was provide description that writes out, that voices the 360-degree view. I don't know if that description is still accessible or not. I know it was, 5 years ago or so. So in that sense, there's some streaming description is used on the web, and it's slow in coming. I know that accessible web design is being more and more understood. More and more websites tags are being not so much full length description, but at least there's a line or two that will explain what a graphic image is so that a screen reader will pick it up.
Well, we have another call, and when we finish with our call, I want to get back to the logistics of the theater. I think I kind of interrupted you mid-thought, and I don't want to do that to you.
All right,
let's bring our caller in. Hello, caller, you're with Joel Snyder and Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, Marlena and Joel. This is Pam.
Hello, Pam. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Hi,
hey,
Pam.
Hi, nice to meet you. First of all, I hope I'm not premature with this, but I wanted to tell you that the first experience I ever had with description was a time when I just happened to be watching TV. I had switched on Channel 13 in New York, WNET 13.
Sure.
And George Shearing came out to announce the descriptive show. And it turned out to be something in mime. And I thought, oh, dear. And I can't even remember the name of it. But it was in mime. And I thought, oh, God, well, hello. And I thought, wait a minute. Let's try this. So I grabbed hold of my VCR, which had a descriptive option. And it was the most adorable show.
Fantastic.
It was about a little girl who had gotten lost in the streets of New York. And a homeless man took her in. And it talked about what they went through for 2 or 3 days. And the thing is, without that description, I would never have been able to appreciate. I mean, the music was nice jazz, but that would have been it. And
that's,
it was just
that's great.
Wonderful. What I want to ask you, we tried here in, well, in Fresno, which is our nearest larger city, to get descriptive video on our public television station. In fact, I helped write. I wrote one of the letters for it. We had a couple of meetings. Well, somehow or other, we were turned down because, somehow or other, and this is my question, this was an educational foundation, and they said that our purpose was not sufficiently educational in nature.
Hmm.
We talked about seniors having lost their sight. We talked about shut-ins. We talked about just anything we could, but they said, no, it didn't have anything to do with education. And I guess my question to you is, how does a station or how does a person, because since there have been times when I thought, God, I wish we had dozens. Our grandchildren are watching Sesame Street now.
Oh, yeah.
And
which we describe it at NCI. They probably hear my voice on there.
Well, we don't hear it in Visalia.
Well, your grandkids do, perhaps, yeah.
Who are you?
Well, yeah, the company I work with, NCI, Described Media, National Captioning Institute, we provide the description for Sesame Street.
What I'm saying is we don't get description because...
Oh, boy.
And I'm thinking, God, kids will say, what are they doing?
So Pam, because I need to try to move it along.
I know you do.
Yeah. So is your question what I think it is?
Who do we contact?
And
the right foundation.
Well, so in Fresno, then, your public television station doesn't provide the SAP signal?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
And we tried it, but we went to the wrong foundation.
Huh. Well, you know what I might recommend, Pam, is do you have access to email?
Oh, of course I do.
Sure. Why don't you just go ahead and send me a note at jsnyder, JSNYDER, @ N as in Nancy, CICAP.org.
NCICAP as in Paul?
Paul, that's right,
.org.
And because it may be a bit complicated, but I can certainly try to help make contact with the public television folks out there and at least discern what the issues are.
And if there's any, because I haven't tried lately and nobody has contacted me again, and it's just
sure.
So if we have it, I don't know it, and I better make sure I don't make a fool of myself, but I will.
No.
Definitely.
Well, I can at least help discern perhaps what some of the issues are, and because we provide description for a great many public television programs, not just Sesame Street, but adult programs as well, and maybe we can figure out exactly what's going on.
Yeah, they said, I think it was all funding, so maybe you can tell
me.
Great.
Too.
All right. Well, send them an email.
We'll help you up.
All right.
Thanks a million.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. We're visiting with Joel Snyder. And, Joel, we usually only keep our guest on for an hour, but are you up for staying on a little longer?
No problem.
We have another call. Can we bring him on in?
Fine.
Hello there. You're with Marlena and Joel, and it's your lucky day because you got on right away. Who's calling?
This is Margaret Johnson. How are you tonight, Marlena?
Hello, Margaret, in Arkansas.
Yes. Well, I just... We do get to watch Sesame Street here, as we have it described, but we don't like it to preempt our radio reading service for the senior citizens that use the receivers.
Uh-huh.
That's their problem. But what I wanted to mention, and I know that y'all are talking about described, you know, stuff, but a while ago when y'all were talking about radio, I wanted to ask Joel if he is familiar with Dick Estelle that reads for National Public Radio.
Oh, I am.
Oh,
I think he's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. When Margaret, didn't he used to read, like, every day for an hour?
I think it's only 30 minutes.
Oh.
But anyway, whatever it is, it's through the weekdays, and it's always some real new book.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, he's
time
a great
to be
reader.
Recorded.
Yeah.
For blind, for the talking book program.
Yeah.
And what is amazing to me is how he covers so much material, and he's not exactly in a hurry. And when he comes on every night, that's when he is around here. When he comes on, he kind of catches you up from, you know, we left off yesterday.
Yes, yes. He has a great style, doesn't he?
He is really good. I just wondered if Joel knew about him.
I don't. What's that name again? His name?
Dick Estelle.
Dick Estelle.
Aha. Uh-huh. I'll have to remember that.
He'd be a great describer, Joel. You ought to nab him.
Sounds like
it. He is really good.
Did you have another question, Margaret?
Well, that's about it. I'd just be glad when we can ever have descriptive video. And, you know, when they told it at our ACB convention, they said the biggest problem was that they're filling up the discs with interviews and takeouts, and we need to get that stopped and give us some space on there.
All right.
You're absolutely right.
And we're gonna talk about that as the show progresses.
Okay.
And one thing I asked Joel to talk about is what we as consumers can do to help create more opportunity for video description. And don't forget S2686. Did I get that right? Yeah, 2686.
Oh, yeah.
When's that going to be voted on?
What we're doing now is contacting senators and asking them to support it so that we can get it out of committee.
Oh, I know. That's going to be...
Yeah.
I'm afraid this is going to be an uphill battle.
Well,
it has been.
It has been for a number of years, but contact your senator.
And we need this stuff. I don't know why... people think that we don't need it, but this and when they come on TV and say the address is on the screen and just for the low price of whatever is on your screen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
No, you're right. And with respect, you're right. You're absolutely right.
All right, Margaret.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye bye. Go ahead, Joel.
No, I was just going to say with respect to S2686, that, of course, covers broadcast television.
Yes.
But what Margaret was saying with respect to DVDs, now that, of course, is not covered by
any
kind of legislation. And I know that Chris Gray, ACB's president, has been just so supportive of description in all formats, and he is planning this year to really pull together folks who are interested in getting description on DVDs and getting past this issue of, oh, golly, no room on the disc.
Yeah,
I think if the DVD producers, and they're the folks that have to be contacted in L.A., you know, it doesn't have anything to do with Congress. In L.A., the DVD producers, if they can be contacted and help to understand that there's a market out there, the people will buy these DVDs, if there's a descriptive track, then they will understand that, well, you know, if you take off an interview and then there's the space to put the description, it will be worth it to them in dollars and cents.
Yeah, and I think
that's the key.
Yeah, and we have another call. We're going to bring you in just a second, caller,
sure.
So just hang tough for one sec. But I think that it really, and this is kind of why I tied them together, I think it's a two-pronged approach, because I think on the one hand, absolutely, people need to be contacting the producers and in Hollywood and making our voices heard. And on the other hand, we need to reinforce that by getting, for people who are blind, the same access that people who are deaf have on just a basic darn old TV show.
Absolutely.
You know, it's
no
crazy.
Question.
I can't.
No question.
It goes, there are many things in life I don't understand, and let me tell you, this tops the list. It makes no sense to me. Let's bring our caller in. Hi there,
sure.
You're with Joel and Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, this is Timothy from Halifax.
Hi, Timothy. You need to speak way up. We can't hear you too well from Halifax.
I'm actually on a cordless.
Oh, I think you need a battery. Did you have a question for Joel?
Actually, no. I just wanted to tell you that we do have an AudioVision Canada, which is our distributed video service.
Oh, yes, I know them well. I know Mark Rosen very well.
NBRS as well as Voiceover Canada. That's what we listen to.
Great. And do you get any described television there? Do you get a fair amount of it?
Only two of our local TV stations, Global and CTV. Right now? In Halifax, anyway. I don't know what other places.
All right.
I had satellite. That's the only other way I'll be able to get
the
rest of the locals.
All right.
No, I know of the folks at AudioVision. They've been really pioneers with this on television in Canada for some time.
All right. Well, thanks, Timothy.
No problem.
Okay.
That's great.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. I do want to get to the question of how do we advocate, but I think before we go there, I think a lot of people might like to understand, again, going back to my very early question, the mechanics of it all. So we're back to the theater, and you have developed this script, and you're going to somehow insert it between the dialogue lines.
That's right. Well, just to tie off that one technical piece, and then I'll come back to the script and such, I think I mentioned that there are technically two ways to communicate the signal. One is the infrared system that many theaters have already in place, because it's a system that provides assisted listening to people who are hard of hearing. If they have a multi-channel system, then they can use a different channel to use for audio description. So sometimes theaters have this infrared system. They can piggyback on that for audio description. Other theaters will use an FM radio system, which is not line of sight. We were talking about that before, putting your hand in front of that light beam and cutting off the signal. Well, an FM radio signal doesn't depend on that kind of line of sight. It goes through walls. It's like any sort of radio signal. And the other thing about FM radio systems is that it's portable. You can pick it up and take it anywhere, and oftentimes when I train describers, that's something that communities like, because they can share between theaters and other kinds of entities in a community that may wish to use audio description. That's kind of a nice thing. They can amortize the cost of the system, which is not any more than a few thousand dollars, really. So they can get a suitcase of 12, 15 receivers and one small transmitter and a microphone, and they're good to go, that kind of thing. You mentioned a script for audio description, and that's interesting, because I would dare say that in theater, in live theater, probably the majority of audio describers for performing arts don't use a script.
Really?
I personally prefer to have enough time and enough viewings of a show in advance to prepare a script that can be used. The way I oftentimes say it is, use the script with about a half an eye on the script and one and a half eyes on the stage, because it is live. Things can happen, and you want to be following the action as you voice the description. But I would dare say most describers are doing description based on a few viewings of the performance, taking notes, developing perhaps a rough outline of what they want to do, say, in the pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue. They may have the script of the show, the actual performance script, and they may scribble notes in between those lines of dialogue. And then they are essentially extemporizing the description as they watch the performance. Doing a full scripted audio description certainly requires more time, more preparation. You have to remember that many performances, many productions that are being described may be tours that are in town for very limited number of performances.
Yes.
And so you really are limited to, I would say, only a few viewings, maybe only one viewing, before you actually have to do a description, a described performance. So it depends on the necessities of the particular gig, if you will. I will share with you an ideal situation that I really strive for. I'm on the board of a theater company here in the Washington, D.C. area called Open Circle Theater. The whole theater company is committed to, its vision is about performances with people, performers, professionals, everybody's paid, who have disabilities, and it's all about access to audiences who have all audiences, people with and without disabilities. And so given that mission, and I'm on the board, of course, every performance involves sign interpretation. Every performance is structured so that performers and audience members can access the stage and the seating areas in wheelchairs. And every performance is audio described so that none of this third Saturday matinee, fourth Friday night has audio description or has sign interpretation. No, no. And you have to make a reservation in advance or something like that. No, no, no. You come to the box office if you just decide that afternoon you want to see the show that night. Come to the box office. You buy your ticket like anyone else. It's audio described. You just pick up a receiver, you go in, audio description is available. Because the audio describer has been hired as a company member, and he, she has been there throughout rehearsals, has developed the script throughout rehearsals, and is there from opening night on with a fully scripted audio description, and is available at every performance, just like an actor.
Boy, how cool is that?
And there you are. And if they're not needed at a particular performance, they leave after a half hour, something like that. You know, they wait to see if someone is going to be there in the audience, of course. Or they stay for the whole performance and practice or whatever it may be. But right now we're performing Evita, as a matter of fact. And gotten great reviews, and we've had a group of people come using description, and it's beginning to catch on, this idea that accessibility is something that is just should be there, and it's an important thing to just have. It's part of our mission, and we want to get the word out so it becomes more a part of the mission of all theater companies.
Well, leave it to my beloved Washington, D.C. to continue to lead the way in this.
<We're trying.
laughs> I miss Washington, D.C. so much. Let me ask you this.
Sure.
So when you're describing for, let's say, a play, a live venue, you don't necessarily, and I can totally see why you wouldn't, do a script and totally stick to that script, because it is live and you don't want to remove the spontaneity of that liveness, if you will, for the blind theater goer. But what about when you're doing a film? How different is that?
Well, in a film, then obviously there isn't going to be, the things are not going to change from one screening to the next, and the timing has to be absolutely precise. Indeed, the script is written to time code, because every frame is precise, is there, has a particular code assigned to it, timing assigned to it. A very precise script is developed for a film, and it's voiced and recorded and put on a separate track that is played in a movie theater. And the voicing is obviously as critical as the language. We spoke to that earlier as part of the fundamentals of audio description, really. The same goes with television broadcast description. All of that is recorded as well, except for the rare time when, for instance, there have been some extemporaneous descriptions done for live events like the inauguration of the president, that sort of thing. And that requires a trained describer who just is at ease with what's going on and is just experienced enough to be able to observe, think through what is critical and voice it, comfortable enough with language, all at the same time. It's comparable to what real-time captioners do. They can listen, and it goes through their fingers and out on the screen and shows up in words, you know, all in like 2 or 3 seconds. It's kind of a magic, really. If you ever watch that being done in a studio, it's a different kind of magic for extemporaneous describers to make that really work really well. It's rare. But but for television, the 99.9% of television and film, of course, it's all very well planned and scripted. And at NCI Describe Media, it's reviewed 3 separate times before it's recorded. And but it's all done very quickly because all of this, certainly for television in particular, well, film really as well, because it's all done, it's a real tight turnarounds we have. We seem to make it work pretty well from all the feedback. Right now, NCI Describe Media has in movie theaters a description for World Trade Center Barnyard. Talk about two extremes, really, in kinds of movies. But so if you go to your local Cineplex, you have to, of course, I would advise folks calling ahead, because as many of your listeners know, you have to go to a Cineplex that is equipped to play description. And then, of course, it may only be available at certain screens, because the equipment is expensive and they only install it in certain screens.
Yes, so, and I'll tell you from personal experience, something sure. that happens here in Seattle. I don't know if it happens elsewhere, but people need to be aware. Just because you read that, let's say, World Trade Center is being described in your theater during 1 week, and you may go 2 weeks later, you still see it there. Oh, it's World Trade. Yep, still there. They frequently change the auditorium.
That's right.
And you lose out. I lost out on Ray that way. Now I bought Ray, so it was okay. But and another issue that I had, I was so looking forward to being able to purchase, because I missed it in the movies, Memoirs of a Geisha. I read the book. I missed
and it
the
may
movie.
Not be on the DVD, though.
And
the description.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And that gets back to our DVD problem. But you're so right, Marlena. Call the movie theater. This is another instance where, unfortunately, you have to check in with the movie theater perhaps that day and just double check that movie is playing in the auditorium that is equipped to play the description, because I wouldn't even trust their websites, to be very honest with you. I wanted to hear the World Trade Center description in the movie theater last week. I checked the website for a particular theater that's near my home, went there without calling. They had changed the auditorium.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to catch it, you know, so what can you do?
Yeah, it's really frustrating, and I never knew that they, I thought, well, it's there, but no, that's not not necessarily the case. Let's talk a bit about, and actually, you know what, let's see if we can hear your clips.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah,
that would be fine.
You know what, we have a call, so while you're firing up your clips, this is a live show, try to describe this. We'll bring the call in. Hi there, you're with Joel Snyder and Marlena. Who's this? Go ahead.
Oh, this is Kathy Blackburn.
Hi, Kathy. I was hoping you'd call.
Yeah, I was just a little confused by my radio, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I just looked at the Regal Cinemas site where they list the films with accessibility features, and they've done it again. They're listing World Trade Center with only open captions.
Only open captions?
Yep.
Oh, that's odd, because we did the captioning. NCI did the captions. They should certainly have the description, too.
Yeah, it's one of these cases, I think, where, again, when I don't know. Okay, y'all did both things on this one, right?
Yes, indeed.
It wasn't CDH doing one and y'all doing the other.
No, we did both. They should have the disc for both. Golly, Kathy, if you want to send me an email, I can double check. Let me know exactly which theater that is.
I was just doing a find on the screen for World Trade Center to see if it was showing anywhere, because it's not, I mean, it's playing in the theater normally here, but I don't think the accessible version is slated to be here yet, unless it's in another week or two. They at least post a week or so ahead, so you know what the next thing coming is.
Well,
if
you'd like to just give them a call and double check, or if you'd like, send me an email and let me know which theater that is. I can certainly get in touch with them tomorrow and give them a nudge, or just if for some reason they didn't get the disc, I can certainly make sure they get the description disc, if that's what they say the issue is. But I can check it or either way. You have my email address, I know,
yeah,
and I can. I'd be happy to track that down for you.
Okay.
Now, Kathy, you've been a long time audio description advocate, as have I. But let me ask you: do you remember your first audio described event?
Live or TV?
Either.
It was probably live. I think it was Crazy for You at the Kennedy Center, because one of our describers and I came up for a conference at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
One of the two that have been there.
And for people who have never, you know, ACB radio is heard around the world. And so for people in North America or elsewhere who have never experienced audio description, what did it mean to you as a blind person to have that experience? How did you feel? Do you remember when you came?
Well, at first, it's an acquired thing, I think, because you have to be directing your attention two places at once.
Right.
And at first, I wasn't sure I liked that, and the headset that they had there was a thing with a bilateral. It just kind of made me think of the doctor's stethoscope.
Yeah,
something
in
both ears. And I've come to prefer something. Well, no, I've gotten kind of used to it now, because the Regal Theater has both ears, and now the and come to think of it, so has AMC. So I've gotten used to it. But at first, it was a thing I had to get used to. But I enjoyed, you know, knowing all the things that were going on. It just took a little getting used to.
Yeah, I remember my, maybe not my first. I mean, well, I certainly remember my first. That was the Miracle Worker. But I knew that story, and I'd read the book, and I'd seen the movie, and I'd, you know, had it described to me by a million people in 3 million different ways. But so the first real thing that absolutely opened my eyes and kicked me around with audio description was when I went to see 42nd Street. And I think that wasn't, it might have been the Kennedy Center, but it, yeah, I think it, well, I don't know where it was. It was so long ago, but anyway, it was in Washington, D.C. And of course, 42nd Street, I mean, there's a lot of dancing in there. And I thought, oh boy, this is going to be fun. You know, I'm going to be singing, let me hear those tapping feet. And all I'm going to hear is tap dancing. And I distinctly remember the describer talking about Peggy and Billy as they were dancing. And she said, to the beat of the music, she said, Peggy twirl, Billy kick, Peggy spin, Billy go round. And I knew everything that they were doing in that dance. And I sat there with chills going down my back because I thought, you know what? There isn't a sighted person in this house that's seeing this any better than I am. And I've never forgotten that.
That's great.
Yeah. All right,
what
Kathy.
What a testimony.
Well, thanks for calling, Miss Kathy. Call me again.
You bet.
All right.
Great to hear you, Kathy. Let me know how it's going there.
866-666-7926. Have you got your clip ready, sir?
I do. I do. What I could do here is, you tell me how you'd like what I do on this little DVD. It's a clip from the Sony Classics picture, The Color of Paradise, and what I often do is play a little bit of it as the audience would experience it without description, this one excerpt without description, the original audio only, and, you know, let people kind of imagine what it's like, because there isn't hardly any dialogue. There's just, well, there isn't really any dialogue. It's just, you know, you could hear it. And then, you know, you tell me what's it like. And then the same clip with the description to kind of get the difference and the impact of what description. I can do it that way, or I can just go right into it with description.
You know your wares. I'll let you decide.
I think it might be fun to kind of get the difference here. I can play a little bit less of it just with the original audio just so you get the idea.
All right.
Let's see how this goes.
All right.
Hopefully it'll work. All right.
Computers.
That come through pretty well?
Yeah, I haven't got a clue what just happened, but yeah, we heard it. We don't know what it is.
Well, see, that's kind of the point, actually. In other words, people listen to that. I mean, and I show this to my audio describer trainees. I mean, people who are fully sighted, and they listen to this, and they are experiencing this with no image on a screen. They're getting this original audio only, and they are essentially experiencing this as someone who's totally blind would experience this, and they're going, huh? what's going on? And I have them imagine what's going on, and of course, if I have 20 people in the room, I get 20 images of what's going on, and they don't have a clue. And then I have them simply listen to the original audio, once again, the exact same audio, but with description. So if you've got the time here, let me play the same thing, but with description.
Sure, we have a call. Let's ask the call to hold, and let's hear
okay.
the same
if
thing
that's
with,
okay.
yep, let's
with
hear
description.
It with description.
And I'll let it go on a little bit longer, because that way you'll get the whole effect
All right.
of the thing. Here we go.
Original audio with description. prescription.
And we're waiting for her.
Muhammad kneels and taps his hands through the thick round cover of brown, curled leaves. A scrawny nestling struggles on the ground near Muhammad's hand. His palm hovers above the baby bird. He lays his hand lightly over the tiny creature. Smiling, Muhammad curls his fingers around the chick and scoops it into his hands. He stands and strokes its nearly featherless head with a fingertip. Muhammad starts as the bird nips his finger. He taps his finger on the chick's gaping beak. He tilts his head back, then drops it forward. Muhammad tips the chick into his front shirt pocket. Wrapping his legs and arms around a tree trunk, Muhammad climbs. Latches onto a tangle of thin upper branches. His legs flail for a foothold. Muhammad stretches an arm between a fork in the trunk of the tree and wedges in his head and shoulder. His shoes slip on the rough bark. He wraps his legs around the lower trunk, then uses his arms to pull himself higher. He rises into thicker foliage and holds onto tangles of smaller branches. Gaining his footing, Muhammad stands upright and cocks his head to one side. An adult bird flies from a nearby branch. Muhammad extends his open hand. He touches a branch and runs his fingers over wide green leaves. He pats his hand down the length of the branch. His fingers trace the smooth bark of the upper branches, search the network of connecting tree limbs, and discover their joints. Above his head, Muhammad's fingers find a dense mass of woven twigs, a bird's nest. Smiling, he removes the chick from his shirt pocket and drops it gently into the nest beside another fledgling. He rubs the top of the chick's head with his index finger. Muhammad wiggles his finger like a worm and taps the chick's open beak. Smiling, he slowly lowers his hand.
Boy, that is...
So there you go.
Yeah, that's quite different from the image that I had.
Yeah?
Yeah. Let's bring our caller in.
You bet.
Hi there. You're with Joel Snyder and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good.
Are we talking about descriptive video tonight?
We are. Did you have a question?
No, but I just wanted to say it's kind of hard to get descriptive video movies, isn't it? I have some on my computer.
Uh-huh.
Joel, how did you get your descriptive video movies? Did you order them?
Well, I actually work with producing them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How
is it that you find it difficult to get hold of them because they're just not available, I guess, huh?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, there are very few DVDs that have description now, and, you know, VHS tapes now are getting harder and harder to find anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's a problem, and as I mentioned earlier, ACB, Chris Gray, is really thinking about ways now to impress upon the DVD producers that there's a real market for description. People want to have this description track that there's 10, 12 million folks out there just in this country.
And it's very handy to have, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Kelly. Well, did you have any other questions?
What all do you do, Joel? I mean, do you help produce the movies or help with the description?
Oh, you know what? You need to re-listen to the first hour on the replay.
Okay.
You came in late tonight, huh?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just came in late tonight.
Oh, that's
no,
okay.
That's all right.
You know what, Kelly? I actually believe that my listeners have a life and that their Sunday nights don't always stop when my show begins. So you catch it on the replay, okay?
Yes, okay.
All right. Well, you take care now.
All right.
Thanks, Kelly.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye.
So availability, that's an area where we need advocacy. Availability both in programming and in being able to purchase these things.
Yeah, I think the biggest things right now are the legislation with respect to S-2686 in committee so that the House and the Senate can come up with something coming out of the committee so that there's a bill that both chambers can agree on that we can actually move toward a law that would come out of this session of Congress, or at least get a head start and get a good running start for next year. S-2686 is a priority, and then I think the second thing would be advocacy for DVDs, for description on DVDs. Would be, I guess, my pecking order there of the way advocacy for description might lead.
But
Chris Gray and Day Al-Muhammad in the ACB office in Washington, they're real sharp and real good on this.
Well, after we bring this caller in, I'm going to ask you, so I'll give you some time to think about it while we talk to our caller, but I'd like to know what you think some good strategies are for advocating for the second piece, the DVD availability. I mean, we know, yeah, you write to the Hollywood producers. Well, who the heck knows who they are, where they are, how they are. But let's bring our caller in and see what he or she has to say. Hi there, you're with Joel Snyder and Marlena. Who's this?
This is another Kelly.
Another Kelly, but another Canadian.
Yep.
Two Kellys in a row. Hey there, Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good there, Marlena.
Great.
I just wanted to say that that was a really good demonstration there, Joel.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah, you're welcome. Because I was sitting here and I'm listening. Well, there's a lot of bird sounds there, but I don't know what's supposed to be happening here. And
what the heck is going on?
Yeah, you know, I was shocked when I heard he was climbing a tree because, you know, when I heard him going, before, when we didn't have description, I thought he was digging a hole.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious, Marlena and Kelly, and actually all of your listeners, I'm curious too, and I ask this of everybody after they've listened to it that second time and they hear about Muhammad. Now, of course, this is an excerpt from the middle of the film. Muhammad himself would have been described earlier, his own characteristics and, you know, what he looks like. But I'm curious, just from listening to the description and describing how Muhammad interacts with his environment and that tree and such, I'm wondering if your listeners have any clues or comment as to any particular characteristics of that individual, that character, Muhammad.
Oh. Well, I'll let Kelly answer first because I do. I actually
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can't play if you've seen the movie before.
No, I haven't seen it, so I can play.
Okay.
What about you, Kelly?
You kind of got me on there. I haven't really thought about it, but I'm wondering if he's maybe a visually impaired person.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Well,
I'll
say what I think, and then Joel, don't say in case other people want to call and play.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, I pictured him. Well, first of all, before the description, I thought him was a her.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, uh-huh. Because the voice is higher than... Okay, so I thought it was a woman digging a hole, but then, of course, it's Muhammad climbing a tree.
Yeah,
And so then when I found out that it was Muhammad climbing a tree, I suddenly pictured a young boy, about 14 or 15, kind of wiry and strong, sort of a sinewy person. And for some reason I pictured him smiling. So we'll see you at the end of the show.
Okay.
So if you called in the first hour, you can call back now and say what your
That's
picture
good.
Was. So we'll all play. We'll all play.
And I have Kelly's is thinking that he is visually impaired in some way.
Yeah.
So we'll remember that, too, because Marlena doesn't want me to reveal anything just yet.
Nope, don't reveal anything yet. Okay. Let's give everybody a chance to play.
That's good.
All right, anything else, Mr. Kelly?
Well, one thing I just wanted to comment on, this is mostly to, you know, the descriptive video producers out there, I guess, or the companies at any rate. I'm wondering why it is that they don't provide descriptive videos, you know, for all of a series. Like, for instance, let's say Jurassic Park. They've got Jurassic Park and Jurassic Park 3 out on video, but not The Lost World, which is the second movie.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering what's the logic behind that. You'd think that they would release them in order.
It's beyond me. You got it. It's a great question, Kelly, and I just don't have a clue. There's probably all kinds of thought processes and just factors at play that we're just not privy to. And so I wouldn't be able to even hazard a guess.
It's just annoying, you know.
Yeah, as far as description, though, is concerned, I just feel as though there's just a lot of education that still has to happen with respect to the principal audience here, which is obviously folks who are blind, folks who have low vision, that would benefit from, that need this service, and that I think represent a significant market for the service and for these companies. We're not talking about charity here. We're talking about 10, 12 million Americans that represent a market for these DVDs, and do the math. And I think, you know, if you calculate that out, even conservatively, I think it represents a force. I don't think anybody's going to become a millionaire over it or anything like that, but I think it still makes sense for them to go that way. But and so I think some educating has to happen.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Kelly.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Good talking to you, Kelly.
How do we start to reach the people we need to reach? And then what do we say?
Well, as I mentioned, I think there's some educating that has to happen. And I think Chris Gray is on the right track there. I think it's got to come from the users. You know, folks like Joel from NCI or my good colleagues at WGBH or other producers of description can say this kind of thing, but we're vendors, you know,
right.
And we obviously are seen as having a vested interest. But the consumers, they're the folks that are actually going to spend the money. You know, they're going to be the ones who actually pay the bills. They're going to be the ones who really represent dollar signs to the DVD producers, to the folks in Hollywood. And I even with the TV things, you know, we talk about legislation to Congress. Well, before that, you know, we do captioning and description for a lot of television stations, and sometimes we would hear from the folks in New York or in L.A. It's like, well, you know, you say that description is desired and how wonderful it is, and you have these testimonies, but we don't hear much from the users of description. We don't get much in the way of email. And then I scratch my head and I go, oh, well, golly. So I say Chris and Day Al-Muhammad are on the right track, because if they can do something in an organized way through ACB, And I'm not talking about, you know, identical emails or what anything
sure,
like
sure.
that. That's, you know, just looks would look sort of silly.
Right.
But if they can figure out ways to present numbers and present, sure, lots of emails, but individualized emails and people that make a real impression on the powers that be, then I think and maybe that means personal visits. I know Chris is in San Francisco, and obviously the people that make the decisions are in L.A. You know, I think that might make a real difference if you know all of those kinds of things. And I talk with Chris via email often, and willing to always continue that kind of dialogue, and with Melanie, of course, and Day in Washington. We need to continue that kind of dialogue
and
keep doing that, not just with them, but with members as well, and the state affiliates too.
And
folks in California.
And
obviously.
I think people really need to learn, users really need to learn how to advocate for this exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we can send an email that says, you know, I'd like to have an accessible DVD of whatever. But I think really making it your own, you know, I'm so upset about this Memoirs of a Geisha thing that I really I have not yet, but I do plan to do some research and figure out to whom I write,
sure.
and express that. I mean, I foolishly made the assumption that I would be able to buy it this summer at the ACB convention when I buy my other 12 movies or whatever.
Yeah.
And another area that I'd kind of like you to comment on, let me give the phone number out first, though, 866-666-7926, if you want to ask a question or play the image game of Mohammed here. but another area on which I'd like to comment, we, not just Seattle, but the Washington Council of the Blind, which is the Washington State affiliate here, when Blind Justice came out, our NBC affiliate, which is KOMO in Seattle, refused, absolutely, completely would not air the descriptive video of that series on their DirecTV feed. Now, they did it on their cable feed, but they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't. And here's what they said. Here's what they said. They said, if they take the feed from DirecTV, they had to leave that feed up 24/7. Okay, and that's true, because I can go to Lifetime, or I can go, you know, to other places where there's descriptive video, where the feed is coming from DirecTV, and when there isn't anything being described, I either hear a loop that goes round and round that tells me, or I hear it in Spanish, or I actually hear the audio of the mainstream programming, but it isn't in surround sound. Okay, so they say, if they take that feed, they have to leave it up 24/7, and their viewers get confused. And don't know that they have tuned into the SAP channel, and they get too many complaints, and it wasn't worth it. Well, I think WCB, gosh, I mean, I know at least 10 people who wrote letters about this, and we wrote directly to the GM for KOMO-TV.
Oh, boy.
And we got absolutely nowhere. What do you do in a case like that? Where do you turn?
Wow. Golly, that's a tough one. You know, I wonder if, you know, if they weigh their number of complaints they get about the SAP against the number of complaints they get about not having it on the SAP. That's a tough one. I don't understand the reasoning there at all. You know, what I was thinking you might say is they were weighing the broadcasting of Spanish translation because then you have two constituencies, and all of that is going to disappear once we have digital broadcasting in place in 2000,
Nine.
I
guess that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But but you know, that's a little ways off.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
bizarre. It was absolutely bizarre. We have another call. Let's bring them on in, and I'll get my temper back under control because this pushed my hot button. Let's bring the caller in. Hi there, caller. You're with Joel Snyder and Marlena. Who's this?
This is Shirley Roberts, and you just pushed my button.
Oh, baby, I tell you what. Let me... Oh.
Hi, Shirley.
I'm comment or not, and after your last comment, I just had to. Because I have run into a similar problem with our local stations. I single-handedly, and I have to say that I actually got our cable company, to carry the SAP.
Right.
For the channels, you know, like for TBS and you know, Turner Classic Movies and Lifetime and so on and so forth. But the problem is we cannot get any of our local network affiliates, you know, to carry any of the SAP. And I have called and called and called them and tried to talk with them about it. And one of them in particular, our CBS affiliate, kind of did the same thing to me that Marlena was talking about. They said, well, you know, we tried to put something on one time or something, and then, you know, our viewers called, and they didn't understand what was going on, and we don't want to lose viewership, and so on and so forth. And I said, well, you know, you could certainly have some kind of an announcement on, you know, like these other networks are doing during the time you're not carrying the description. Well, yeah, you know, they could put something together like that, but, you know, it's been, you know, like 4 years, and they still haven't bothered to do it.
It's so frustrating.
It's very, very frustrating.
It really, and
extremely.
I mean, and I even wrote a letter to the editor of the, you know, a letter to the editor column in the Seattle Times, and of course they didn't publish it, but I said, you know, KOMO thinks its listeners are too stupid to comprehend what thinks its viewers are too stupid to comprehend what the viewers of King and all the other TV stations that provide this seem to comprehend. Why are people who watch KOMO not able to do this?
It's really a simple adjustment on your remote control to turn off the SAP or turn off the stereo to not have the SAP on if you don't want it. You know,
I know.
All that a sighted person has to do if they don't want to hear the SAP signal.
But I sure wish that we had some way, you know, to have more pool with these network affiliates, because it's ridiculous. They don't have to do it, and so they're not going to.
Well, are you...
Even if you take a look even like at Lifetime, during the time that, you know, they had the ruling in place, you know, where they had to provide so many hours of description a week, they made quite a few TV movies with description. Since, you know, they dropped that ruling, the only movies you ever see with description on that network now are the ones that were made like 4 years ago during that time frame when they had to do them.
That's right,
you're right. So, it's most of them just do what they have to as a mandatory thing.
Well, Charlie, have you contacted your senators yet about S-2686?
Oh, gosh, you didn't have to ask me that.
Yes, I did.
Internet radio, did you?
I'm really worried about my listeners. I asked everybody last week to contact your senators and then drop me a note and tell me that you did it, and I haven't gotten any notes, people.
Yeah,
not a
I
one.
Would imagine. No, I honestly can't say that I have. I mean, I've really tried to put out a lot of effort locally, and I've had real good luck with one guy at our cable company, and I've accomplished a lot along those lines, but I've sort of gotten discouraged and haven't done the other part of it.
And you know what? That's a problem too. I mean, it really
is.
You just get sick of it. You get sick of asking for the most absurdly simple, logical things.
You feel like you're the basic one in the area that's doing the advocating for it.
Yeah, but then your hot button gets pushed, and you know your job's not done until you contact those senators, girl.
No, that's true. That's true.
Right.
But then that is a reason then a good reason for the state affiliates to as a group to help out with that.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the national. So.
That is true. I agree with you
well,
there.
Well, and Shirley, did you have an image of Mohammed?
You know, unfortunately, I had an interruption during that time in this part of it. I had a phone call.
Okay.
What was the actual show or movie that was
done? It's called The Color of Paradise.
Okay. Okay.
And,
well, I'm going to listen to it again later because I missed the beginning part
of
that.
There you go. Good.
Okay, good. But stay tuned to the end of the show, and we'll hear what he really did look like.
Okay, and Mr. Snyder, I really appreciate, you know, the work that you do.
Well, thank you.
I met you last year briefly. My husband and I did, not this past summer, but the year
before
when you guys were giving that award to the person that was affiliated with Schindler's List.
Oh, that was from... yeah, that was. I think that was the folks at WGBH that might have been.
Yeah.
Is that right? Or, yeah.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
I know that came in
that had something to do with Spielberg or something, and you guys gave him an award.
Our Carol Leahy from the Nevada Council of the Blind.
Yeah. I don't know.
But I know you and Don, and I appreciate all the good comments you make on the audio description listserv.
Oh, thank you.
So, absolutely.
Okay.
So, I know the both of you, actually. So.
Well, thank you very much, sir. Good to make
you. Oh, you bet.
All right, Miss Shirley.
Thanks a lot, Marlene.
All right, you take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. We've got Joel Snyder with us tonight. He's doing yeoman's duty here. I don't often have company in the second hour of my show, so I'm pleased
to be with you, Marlene.
This is great. You mentioned an audio description listserv. What is that?
Oh, sure. That's... Well, thank you for mentioning it. Yeah. In fact, I would encourage your listeners who are interested in learning more about description, if I can mention a couple of websites. First of all, www.adinternational.org. Audio Description International is you noted earlier on, I was on the founding board or chair of the founding steering committee for the organization. The organization as such doesn't exist except through this website, which a wonderful guy in North Carolina, Fred Brack, maintains. And that adinternational.org is the address for the website. It has loads of information about audio description and examples of description. And if I'm not mistaken, it has... information on how people can join the listserv, which is part of Yahoo Groups, and it can help you learn more about description on that listserv. And as any listserv, it gets dormant from period to time to time, and but then kind of sparks up when new people join or something and ask a question or post information. Another website that, if I may be so bold to mention, is the website for my organization, my own organization that does description with museums and theater, and I train folks all over the world, is audiodescribe.com. And I think that website has a lot of good information as well and a lot of clips. Demonstrating description also.
Great.
So those
great.
Two sites might be helpful.
All right, we have another caller. Let's bring him on in.
Great.
Hi there, caller. You're with Joel Snyder and Marlena. Who's this?
Yes, hello. It is Abdul Kamara.
Abdul, how are you?
Hi. I'm well.
Abdul was my guest, and he was on the hot seat at this very time last week, Joel.
Hot seat it was.
Oh, you did a wonderful show. I got great email about. In fact, people are yelling at me because I haven't got that darn show archived yet.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, indeed. And Abdul spent an hour with us, or very close to an hour, talking about S2686.
Oh, wonderful.
Talking about strategies to advocate
yeah.
for that.
Yeah.
Well, welcome on back. You're brave to come back.
Oh, thank you. if anything else, I just kind of wanted to contribute a little bit of an update as
yes,
far as
please.
How S2686
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
currently, the American Council of the Blind has, at the behest of Senator McCain, drafted a letter.
Yes,
in effect, basically states our support or expresses our support for the provisions that specifically benefit the American Council of the American Council of the Blind, and as well as organizations that are in league with us. Clearly,
right.
The net neutrality provision is a very controversial one. We've remained neutral on that matter, but on the issues that benefit disabled individuals, we have basically written a letter that says, okay, well, we're supporting these provisions. So we have well over 10 signatories thus far, so various organizations. We're hoping to get more. By the end
of this week, Abdul, National Captioning Institute, I'm sure, will be a signator.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah, so it looks great. I have an appointment, actually, with one of our senators here in Georgia, Senator Isaacson, and I hope to charm, cajole, or do whatever I need to do in an effort to get his support. While we're not certain as to how this bill will turn out, we're hoping that we can get it to the point where senators may be allowed to vote on it.
Yeah.
Moreover, it struck me as interesting that there are just a number of organizations, broadcasters, that have been obstreperous toward our efforts to make descriptive video accessible to 9 million blind individuals in this country.
Yeah.
And, there are stats that have been recently put out that says that an hour descriptive video costs anywhere from about $2,000 to $4,000, and so when you look at the fact that, say, Seinfeld received $1 million for every episode that he participated in, and as well as our mother crew and actors, $4,000 is a drop in the bucket.
Right.
Whenever legislation for descriptive video has been kind of tossed out the door, broadcasters and programmers and producers have seen little reason to support it. And there are a lot of misconceptions about it. And I think that what we really need to do in order to get descriptive video accessible to all is to educate. Right now we are kind of going through this very hard, laborious process of promulgating this bill and getting it out, for a vote. But we also need to work actively by writing letters, also writing editorials. That's something that's accessible to us as well, that educates the masses about descriptive video. It is a transparent mechanism that can be turned on or off, and it's not something that confuses people just that easily. You have to be basically sitting on your remote for that to be a real issue. So.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you I'm sure heard me describe what we faced here in Washington with the NBC affiliate.
Right.
Or are they ABC? I can't remember. Anyway, and Blind Justice. I mean, it was absolutely the most ridiculous thing. And that is something that the affiliate here did really get involved with and did send email directly to the station's GM, and we couldn't budget. Just couldn't. Made absolutely no difference.
Yeah. Well, and as I had indicated, that rationale just does not fly. Because it costs millions of dollars for every hour of television, and particularly on those affiliates. So what's $2,000 to $4,000 to basically produce this? And what's more, this is assuming that it would actually come out of their pockets, which actually it would not. Every day, whenever we turn on any kind of TV programming, we hear that closed captioning and other considerations are supported by other sponsors. And so why can't that happen for us? And so
So here's an interesting question, actually, for the two of you, and maybe I'll ask Joel to respond first and see what his take, since he is with the Captioning Institute. How did deaf people get where they are, and why can't we?
Yeah, boy, I wish I could speak authoritatively to that. I know a little bit about it, but I've been at NCI just a little over 4 years, and of course captioning was mandated just over 20 years ago. And, you know, there are twice as many, roughly going by the numbers, twice as many people who are deaf or hard of hearing as there are people who are blind or have low vision. And, I think, perhaps some would say that their voice is perhaps a bit more organized. I don't know if that's true or not. Or their advocacy efforts are a bit more strong, but visible, if you will. I know that. I will say this though: in the early going, I have heard this from my colleagues at NCI. It was no less difficult. It was tough getting things moving, getting things legislated. It became clear even then that, there were the same kinds of, hey, don't press on the legislating, this will come, this is something we want to do, this is something that will happen, there's no need for legislation, it'll get picked up, but as you see so often, a lot of times these things just don't happen unless there's just a mandate for it, and I'm not sure you would have any captioning necessarily if there hadn't been a law put in place, and I don't think you'll ever have description in any sort of a broad sense on television unless there's it's a law.
Abdul, what's your take on this, Abdul? Why don't we have this as blind people?
Well, I concur with his opinion greatly. I do believe, pardon me for using a somewhat esoteric term, but there is a great schism that exists in the blind community, and primarily, as you see, that with ACB and NFB.
Yeah.
We certainly ostensibly work toward the same goals. Nevertheless, our methodologies differ significantly. The reality is that our approach toward getting DVS accessible to the blind and visually impaired has been a fragmented kind of approach, and which is detrimental to our goals. The National Federation of the Blind, as I understand it, does not really have a position on this matter. And, prior to the time when ACB did kind of form from NFB, it's my understanding that legislation that kind of furthered the goals of the disabled, and particularly the blind and visually impaired, were very effective. Our efforts to lobby for that were rather effective. And after that split, it no longer came to be. So, yes. And you can also speak to the population of the hard of hearing population, and that it being much greater than ours to some degree. But I still do think that, again, 9 million is a significant enough number in a sense.
Yeah.
That our senators and congressmen should be paying attention. But most senators and congressmen don't know that it's 9 million. So we kind of need to start making our collective voices heard in that regard.
How do we?
Right.
How do we play on the fact that it's certainly been my experience that when I have introduced descriptive video to sighted people, my husband is a good case in point. He was kind of lukewarm about this whole, we're gonna watch a movie and it's gonna, I don't know.
Somebody's gonna be talking?
Yeah, and now he dislikes movies without descriptive video, and he's fully sighted. How do we can we document more of that kind of thing and
well,
grow that?
I have for years talked about the notion and tried to sell the idea to people, the those DVD producers. Once we sell them description, it's theirs. you know, and they can do with it as they will and use it to make more money if they just simply took the soundtrack of their movie along with description, put it on a CD, and instead of just limiting the marketing to, Abdul says 9 million, I've oftentimes used 10 or 12 million, I don't know, you know, the numbers AFB and NFB and ACB. But anyway, instead of limiting the marketing to those folks, you have 300 million Americans, you know, out there,
yeah.
People who drive cars or ride in cars, put it all on a CD,
absolutely.
And you can listen
yes.
to your favorite movie and see in your mind's eye, while you're driving, relive the experience of World Trade Center,
right.
whatever the movie was that you saw. And so here you have a byproduct from having bought the description for the DVD. You don't pay any more for it. Obviously, there might be some legal costs, some rights costs if producing the CD. That's next to nothing. But, you know, I don't understand why people, and that's been done in Canada on audio cassettes with limited success because they haven't marketed it well. But, you know, and they've only done it with public domain titles. But, you know, I'm not quite sure why that couldn't be embraced and run
right.
with.
And just to kind of add to that, it's something that
yeah.
I pointed out last week, because when I just heard you say that, I was, you know, in my mind standing up and applauding you. Generally, whenever our country has embraced accessibility as part of, you know, the mainstream, the society at large has benefited in some fashion or another. We often tend to regard accessibility, and you were talking, Marlena, about how we can be able to document this and how we can be able to demonstrate this. You know, ramps on the sidewalks are not only used,
yeah,
you know, by
yeah.
people with wheelchairs, they're used by, you know, by mothers with strollers.
Sure.
Right.
You know, we talk about, you know, text-to-speech technology, and now we see it in GPS units and cars. You know,
right.
The examples go on and on and on, and as far as whenever our society chooses, and they often have to be pushed into
yeah.
the efforts towards that are very hard. But whenever we arrive at that point, when they've embraced accessibility on a broader scale, it tends to benefit everybody, not only
yeah.
the disabled.
Marlena, if I could just pick up on the previous point that Abdul
sure.
brought up, which was so great. You know, I do a lot of speaking abroad, and I have visited any number of times our friends and colleagues at the Royal National Institute of the Blind in London.
Mm-hmm.
What a amazingly effective advocate for description. London, England is a country that, you know, came to description later
yeah.
than the United States as far as description for television, and well, for all of description, but certainly television. I wrote in voice some of the first public television description, because the GBH that brought television description to light in 1985, they did it as a pilot through the Washington Ear. So England started it a little bit later, but they're way ahead of us now as far as legislation, as far as DVDs, all, I think, because of the advocacy of the Royal National Institute of the Blind. They are one service organization nationally for the blind and people who have low vision. We are indeed split here among many, but principally the two membership organizations. And if there are ways for Chris and Dr. Maurer to work together on this issue, to bring the memberships together on this issue, I mean, initially the idea was that, well, you know, NFB really wanted that those emergency scrolls voiced first, and then it had to be a priority. Well, that's been taken care of. The emergency scrolls are in the legislation, and everybody agrees that, of course, the emergency scrolls have to be voiced, and we're on the same track on that. So if there's some way, and I've made it my point, a real point of my own work, to every year work closely with NFB to to go to their conferences whenever they are open to it and work with young folks and description. I've done workshops there to open people up to description just in general, and to try and make the point that description isn't just about entertainment, to try and work with them in their notion, their emphasis on employment, that description is about employment. When you know your culture, when you are more attuned to what's going on in film, in television, in the world,
absolutely,
you're more employable.
Absolutely.
You know, so I try to emphasize that. It's not just about, it's a nice thing, it's a glossy thing because it's entertainment. No, it's key to being more culturally attuned. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, this is, I keep forgetting I'm doing a radio show. I'm sitting here.
Well.
I'm just fascinated with this.
Yeah. And I indeed just wanted to call in. I know that there are other callers who probably want to comment. But,
Abdul, you've made such wonderful comments. Absolutely.
And, you know, I won't be on live next week. I may have a sit-in for my show, or we may do a rerun. But in any case, whether I'm on or if someone else is on live or the following week when I will be on live, please call me back with an update.
Absolutely.
On 2686.
Oh,
and
I
just really want my listeners to please take the time, go to the web, get your senator's email address, send them both the same email.
I don't care, but
contact them.
And don't be afraid to call either. In the final analysis, you don't really have to get into a debate with your senator.
No.
You don't really have to argue with them. And this is something that, you know, kind of Chris, would emphasize as well. But when you can be able to convey your point in a clear and concise manner, and when you're able to emphasize it in such a way that the senator or your representative is able to understand and to sympathize with your position, then you have done your job. Then, you know, you leave it to him to deliberate over whether or not, you know, this is something that he's going to vote on. Call your senators. They are your servants. You elected them into, you voted for them or not. But, you know, in the final analysis, whether you did vote for them or not, they are there to serve your needs. And so in the final analysis, you must approach it from that point. Do not be afraid to call. Do not be afraid to write letters. Do not be afraid. and just carry on. So I will be calling affiliates, presidents of affiliates. I will be calling all of
That's
our supporters all throughout this week. And we feel, we're confident that we can be able to get further with this bill. And so do not lose hope. Stay excited. You ain't seen nothing yet, as it were.
Yeah, well, get Joel on your bandwagon here.
Cool mess.
Yeah.
Wonderful to meet you, Abdul.
Thank you. Likewise.
Telephonically.
Likewise.
All right, Abdul. Thank you so much.
Sue me.
Bye-bye. And if you don't contact your senators, ask yourself why not. Why not? Why didn't you do it? 866-666-7926. We're almost to the end. All right, it's time to know the answer to the question. It is time to know, drum roll, please, Mr. Producer, if I had one.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Kelly from Canada wins the prize.
You're kidding!
And it's true. Well, I guess the point I was sort of getting at, and what's interesting when I have people listen to the description, oftentimes people will pick up on the fact that when we describe Muhammad's interaction with his environment, it's all about what he, and when people go back and re-listen to that segment, it's all about how he feels the branches, he reaches out, about he touches this, about he extends his fingers, about he gropes for that. He's blind.
Wow.
And it's apparent to the sighted viewer, and he's, Muhammad himself is described, from the get-go, of course, but in the film, And but in that excerpt, of course, it's not referred to specifically. But it's always interesting to wonder if some people, sometimes people will just pick up on it just by hearing how he's, how his interactions with the environment are described.
That's
and Kelly seemed to pick up on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, Kelly's one of these sensitive New Age guys, you know.
There you go.
He actually does a New Age show on ACB Radio
go.
Interactive. So now we know why he's a sensitive New Age kind of guy.
That's what it is.
That is fascinating. Well,
yeah.
Joel, this has been absolutely delightful, and I so appreciate that you...
Well, I have had great fun, Marlena.
Gosh, I've wanted to bring you on for so long, and, you know, normally I would give you a little more than 4 hours' notice.
Well, no.
At a wedding, no less.
That's right. Well, I have had great fun, and it has been an honor, and we've got to do it again.
Yeah,
absolutely. And this is timely, though, because anything I can do to help with this S2686, so...
Yeah,
this is just fine.
Would you give some contact information if anyone wants to get a hold of you to discuss some of this further or maybe get you involved in doing some narrating, etc.?
Let me give you my I can give you my email at NCI Described Media. That's National Captioning Institute Described Media. The email address is jsnyder@ncicap.org, and the phone number, my direct line in the Washington, D.C. area is 703-917-7693.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Joel, and I still want to talk to you about the other little movie project we batted around in the hallway when I was going one direction and you were going in the other. So we won't let
you
that
bet.
Cat out of the bag yet. But I haven't forgotten. I have not forgotten.
You bet.
All right. Thanks
you
so
bet.
Much, Joel.
Give that Gary person a hug for me, too, will
I'll
you?
Do it indeed.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Marlena.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Oh, what a wonderful world it would be, wouldn't it?
Trees of blue.
If we all could have the description that we seem to want, that we all want.
This day, the dogs say goodnight, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, that's enough of that. We're almost out of time. I really want to emphasize that Joel came on to the program at the last minute. The guest that I had hoped for this week could not be confirmed, and I tried up until the very last second to get them confirmed. So we won't let that cat out of the bag either, but hopefully we'll be able to bring that person on in a few weeks. Upcoming programs. Well, I'd love to hear from you about what you might like to hear on the Marlena program. You know, I'm a one person without a staff to help me put these shows together. So if you have someone that you think would make a great guest or you yourself would like to be a guest, oh my goodness, we've got all kinds of phones ringing now, on my show, I would love to have you or to hear from you about your idea for who that might be. Coming up, we are going to be talking with a gentleman who runs a program from a prison. Now, he is not an inmate, but he is a blind gentleman who works in a correctional facility in Massachusetts, and I think of it as Braille from jail. I originally heard Matthew Chow on the Council Connection program, which is aired on ACB Radio Mainstream, produced from the Bay State Council of the Blind, and I was just so taken with his stories and so on that I tracked him down, and he is very much looking forward to being on the program. That will either be the last Sunday in August or the first Sunday in September. And so I'm quite eager to bring that program to you. Also want to remind you that on Monday nights in the politics room at ourplace.acbradio.org, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, Tuesdays at 1 Universal, is where you want to be to participate in ACB Radio's sports show. David Gross from Pittsburgh does a half-hour recording, and then the show is aired on the Weekend Roundup, which now is a three-hour day on Sundays on ACB Radio Mainstream. So we got it all going on here on ACB Radio. So I think that's about going to wrap it up. I won't be here next week. I will be actually at a baseball game, and we will either replay one of the more popular shows or have someone sit in for us. We will be here the week after, so you guys stay safe, and please come back and listen each week at this time to Marlena right here on ACB Radio Mainstream. My email address is coming up in the closing announcements, so thanks for listening. I'm Marlena, and this is the music of Lee Rettenhauer, A Little Dolphin Dreamin', as we go out for this week. It's been a joy to be with you, and I hope you'll come back next week right here on ACB Radio Mainstream. Let me thank the team that helps make all of this happen. That's Chrissy Cochran in the UK, Jeff Shang in Australia, and Gary the Bored Guy in the other room. We'll be back again, same time, same place, next week here on ACB Radio Mainstream. But if you'd like to send me an email in the meantime, you can address it to Marlena. That's M-A-R L-A-I-N-A at acbradio.org. Till we're together again, have a great week, and we'll see you next time, right here on Mainstream.